Hey, Headlampers, welcome to the Headlamp Hour. I'm your host, Nate Jukes, and on this episode of the Headlamp Hour, we talk with Rachel Norfleet. She is an ultra runner based in Bozeman, Montana. She's also the newly minted director of partnerships at Aravaipa, the beloved trail and ultra events company headed by Jamil Corey. In this episode, we talk about her recent Strava segment attempt in the Denver airport on one of her layovers. We also talk about a recent car accident she was in and how she's recovering from that, her family life with her husband Mitch, who is a pilot for Southwest Airlines, and her 2.5-year-old son Callum. We also talk about how she recently landed the position at Aravaipa, what she calls her dream job, the intersection of her passion and professional skills. And if you like this episode, or if you don't, please go rate and review on Spotify or Apple. Thank you so much, and I hope you enjoy the conversation with Rachel Norfleet. All right, Rachel Norfleet, welcome to the Headlamp Hour podcast. I'm so glad to have you today. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. I'm happy to be here. How are you?
Good, good. Doing well. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. I've been looking forward to this conversation for a while now. Yeah, I just wanted to start things off first. I know you just got back from a trip. It looked like you were in Austin, Texas. But en route to Austin, so you're based in Montana. Bozeman, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. It looked like you went through the Denver airport and you did something really exciting there in the Denver airport that you posted to your Instagram. You tried to go for a Strava segment in Terminal B that's called Gate Change NAR. You're shredding the NAR in the terminal there. And so I just wanted to give you a chance to talk about that a little bit. First of all, let me kind of set it up, or at least I kind of nerded out and went on the Strava segment and looked at all the details, but it looks like it's 0.1 miles, so about 160 meters or so. And the segment runs parallel to like a moving walkway, but somebody filmed it. Maybe it was your husband or somebody filmed it. And, you did not use the moving walkway. And you got 20 seconds, and you were able to secure the second spot for, on the female side of the Strava segment. So congrats on that. How did that feel?
You know, it's my best performance this year to date, I think. So, pretty proud of that one. My husband's an airline pilot for Southwest, and because of that, we fly standby when we go on trips like this. And we had not made it on our first flight, so we were waiting around for an awkward amount of time, and he proposed to me that we go do this segment. And, you know, I'm in business casual, like my hair is down, you know, I'm like, I'm not, you know, trying to do that today, but he's like, come on, it'll be fun. So anyway, we went and did it. It was hilarious. And I didn't think about it until afterwards. Do people use the moving walkway? I do wonder if some of those times are utilizing that.
I did a little research. Okay. I really nerded out on this. So here we go. So
did you?
Your time was 20 seconds, which equates to about 25 seconds for a 200 meter or 50 seconds for a 400, which is pretty dang fast. And you know, it's 160 meters, so it's really short, but you, like you said, you were, I mean, it looked like you, pulled your hair back at least and really went for it, but that's still really fast. And then I looked at the number one female there on Strava. And in her comments, when she got the crown, she claimed she did not use the moving walkway. I forgot to write her time down, but I don't think it was much faster than yours, maybe 18 or 19 seconds.
Yeah, it was 18. I noticed because I saw that afterwards. I'm like, well, now I have to do it again.
Yeah, which is believable. Like, I think somebody could run 18 seconds for 160 meters. Like that's like 20, maybe that's still really fast, though, like a 23, 24 second 200, but we'll give it to her. Okay. But the number one guy who did it in 12 seconds,
I don't believe that that he did it
No,
without
that's
the moving walkway, because that equates to a
yeah.
7,500 meter. So that's like breaking the world record. However, in his comments, he claimed that he didn't use the moving walkway, but a GPS glitch may or may not have affected that time. So either got to use the moving walkway or a hardcore GPS glitch to get that segment down. But
That is funny. I love the deep dive. I don't use Strava. I used to use it. I've been dark since 2018 on Strava, but that's my one upload. So you can
good.
find it out there.
Well, I certainly enjoyed it and had fun with it. So I want you to keep going for these
I
your Strava segments and posting about it. So really cool.
love
All
it. Well,
right.
thank you.
Yeah, sure. All right. Well, getting into it now, the opening question that I ask folks on this podcast is, where did you grow up, and what about that location or environment helped you grow into the person and runner you are today? Thinking about, your parents, maybe siblings, friends, teachers, etc.
Yeah, so I grew up in Kansas City, Missouri. I have two amazing parents, two siblings, so there are three of us total, and we're a really tight-knit group. I'm very close with my whole family. My parents are, they came from a childhood where they had next to nothing and worked really hard and went to college and came out working kind of blue-collar jobs. And I just watched them my entire upbringing work so hard to give us a life that they did not have. And I think that that went a long way in instilling values in me. My siblings being, two of my best friends in the whole wide world, I think that created an environment where I always felt supported by the people who are closest to me. And I think that is monumental and just, feeling confident and going after my goals and just knowing that I have that strong support system to lean into in hard times and to celebrate the good things with. So I think those two things were huge for me. And I also grew up swimming. So reflecting on this, when you asked, I think heaving yourself into a 68 degree cold pool twice a day, every day for like 15 years did something for my resiliency and just dedication to a task and just being able to take a large goal and break it up into daily, weekly, monthly, chunks and drive towards it. Yeah, so I think my family, my background in swimming, and then additionally, it's kind of a weird one, but Kansas City is it sees all seasons, as I'm sure you see, in the Utah where you live. I mean, we got harsh winters. It's humid there, so I mean, winters are just like bone chilling cold, and summers are hot and humid, and just having the mix of elements, I think, is an interesting, I don't know. I think that that goes towards making you who you are, just being able to continue to get out and brave the elements. I mean, moving towards after I stopped swimming in college, I raced triathlon for years living in Kansas City. And, it takes a lot to get up and go run when it's raining sideways or hailing or snowing or, whatever. So, anyway, I think those things all helped to kind of shape me into the person I am today.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. Yeah, those Kansas City winters can be pretty, like anywhere in the Midwest is can be really cold. I spent 2 years in Columbia, Missouri doing my master's at the University of Missouri. And so yeah, that I think they're like colder than Utah even. I don't know, something about it just like cuts through you more, like the cold there. It's pretty bad. But
Yeah, it's the humidity. It makes a big difference because, yeah, you and I both live in dry mountain climates now, and it's a totally different winter experience. So I think that goes to shaping you a little bit. So I'm glad you can relate to that.
yeah. What college did you go to? You
I
said
went to, so in, Yeah, initially I swam in college down at the university. Well, it was a small D2 school in Lakeland called Florida Southern College. And then after I spent a year down there, I transferred home to pursue nursing at the University of Missouri, Kansas City.
Awesome. UMKC, the aren't they the kangaroos or something like that? The Roos?
Yes. Yeah, the Roos.
The Roos. They were in our conference called the Summit League when I was in Southern Utah University before we switched to the Big Sky. But yeah, they were we had some good races with them. They had a couple of good guys and gals. Anyways, yeah, really cool. Love it. Kansas City background. So are you a Kansas City Chiefs fan then?
Absolutely. I mean, that was kind of just drilled into me from my upbringing. But yeah, we're huge Chiefs fans, and it's finally been fun to be a Chiefs fan the last couple of years here. So we've had a lot of fun with it.
And what's your take on the whole Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce romance? Is it good for good for the sport, good for your team with the more, you know, being in the spotlight, or does it detract from it?
You know, I think at the end of the day, it seems like a good thing for both of them personally, and that is what is important. Obviously, I think it's done a lot for the business. I think Taylor's brought some new fans to football. And maybe some football fans have some negative things to say, but I think ultimately it's just about them and their life and their relationship, and the rest doesn't matter so much.
Right. Good. Like that. And you mentioned you had a background in swimming and then in triathlon. Yeah. It seems like you had a fairly long and accomplished career as a triathlete. So I guess, like, just briefly, how did that go and how did that prepare you or transition into trail and ultra running?
Yeah, so I left collegiate swimming after 1 year, mostly because it became very clear that you could not adequately pursue both swimming and nursing at the same time, at my school at least, in the way that things were structured, and that most people chose to spend their 4 years of eligibility swimming, and then they went back to nursing school after. And that, anyway, didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So I transferred for those reasons. And, you know, I found myself going to school. UMKC is kind of like a commuter campus. There's not, you know, people don't really live on campus. There's not Greek life. Like, so I found myself for the first time feeling kind of lost because, you know, you grow up doing a sport that is so integral to your daily practice and your sense of self. And I was navigating life for the first time without that. And I, you know, would go to the gym and, you know, I was trying to find my path and feeling good in my body and just in fitness in some way. But I think I really missed having a goal, and I was nannying for a family. The mom is a psychiatrist and a triathlete, and she kind of saw this like personality identity crisis kind of unfolding in me. And she took me under her wing and got me into triathlon. So she helped me, you know, go look at my first bike and taught me how to ride in a group. And she was just a really, really cool mentor to me in that time in my life. So that is how I got into it. And my first triathlon was a half Ironman. I did it because she was signed up for it, and knew that that was a lofty goal, but I felt like it was something I could do. And after that, I was just hooked. So I raced for 4 or 5 years and had some fun success with it, and raced at the Ironman World Championship a few times. And yeah, it was just a really fun chapter in my life. But, you know, I was going to school, I was working a lot of side jobs and trying to race at a high level. And layered with that, I have some autoimmune thyroid issues that I deal with. So I have Graves and Hashimoto's, which less than 2% of the population in the world have both of those in conjunction. So it's a really delicate balance in terms of like how I can stress my body and things that I need to be doing to support myself, you know, just from a stress and nutrition and sleep standpoint. And I just was not giving my body what it needed through, you know, having all of these different stressors in my life between school and my jobs and training. And so in 2018, following the Ironman World Championship, I had a thyroid crisis. And the short of it is that that is something that is very destructive to your body. It took a really long time for me to recover from that. So in that phase of my life, probably a year and a half, I had just kind of parted ways with sport in my mind. I was like, okay, well, I'm not, you know, I can't race endurance sports anymore. Like, that's the end of it. And that's fine. So around that time, I had graduated. I was working my first job and spent a lot of time. So I moved from Kansas City for my first job. I was out in California and spent a lot of time hiking in the Santa Monica Mountains. And, you know, I found like a functional thyroid physician that I was working with out there, and she helped me get off some of these like harsh drugs that I was on. And anyway, just as we unraveled my like health stuff and things began to come around, I really just fell in love with trail running. So the hikes turned to runs, and that was really my impetus for getting into the sport. But even prior to that, when I raced triathlon, I had friends that would do these ultras. I think my first race that I came to was 2014, Javelina. So I had been introduced to it, you know, many years prior. I had paced many friends to their, you know, 100-mile finish line. So I always had interest. I just didn't know how it fit into my life being a triathlete and didn't have capacity to pursue it. So anyway, yeah, around 2019, 2020, I really took an interest in running and began pursuing running from there.
That's so interesting. And I appreciate you bringing up your autoimmune, I guess, condition or issues around that. I was wanting to ask you about that and kind of how it affected, you know, your athletic pursuits. And it sounds like it kind of, I guess if this is a fair summary of what you said, it kind of prevented you from kind of doing triathlon. But then once you kind of were able to get the medical help that you needed, then you were ready to enter another athletic pursuit. And by that time you were in California hiking trails and you thought, I can run trails now. Is that kind of a fair summary of what kind of transpired there and how the autoimmune disease that you had like kind of affected it?
Yeah, I think ultimately in reflection, it was a really important pause in my life because what it gave me was a time to physically heal from what had happened and to figure out a, you know, sustainable path forward with things in my, you know, lifestyle adaptations, things around my diet. You know, I worked with a lot of different professionals in that time to kind of figure out what I needed. So it was important from that standpoint, but it also was really important mentally. And I took that time to really kind of dissect like, well, how did we get here? And, you know, why, I don't know, you know, like I put a lot of pressure on myself to perform. And I think what it did is it just kind of took me back to like, yeah, if I do get to do this again, it's going to come with a very different lens. And that lens is, you know, we do this ultimately sport from mm-hmm. a place of joy. And we are, you know, I felt so grateful to just go hike once I was able to do that with my body and so grateful to take those first steps when I, you know, went on my first run. And I think it really just has continued to center me around this gratitude for gratitude and respect for my body, I think, in a way that I didn't have before, and just a greater understanding of what I needed as a person to, you know, potentially pursue big goals again. And it took a little bit of time to go from like, okay, now I can run to, okay, now I want to pursue sport at a high level. I think that was another point of like, oh no, like I don't want to get back to the place that I, you know, used to be in. But again, I think, you know, that period of a year when I was healing just gave me a new and important lens.
Yeah. a couple of things. I think you said that so beautifully. When, you know, something that you love is kind of taken away by an illness or injury, and especially in a big way that could seem very permanent, like the thing that you had, you know, not just a little like injury niggle that lasts a couple of weeks, but something bigger, then it really makes you take a step back and appreciate it and approach it with gratitude and respect, like you were saying. So that's really cool and awesome. And then another thing that you said is, and now that I'm kind of back into it, now I have the fire to, you know, take it to the next level, which I think is something that a lot of us can relate to in our lives, especially those who had been in competitive environments in the past, like you with college swimming and in, you know, competitive professional triathlon space. Like it's kind of like really hard to suppress that, competitive spirit, I think.
Yeah. And I definitely think that my, you know, running went from a place of just enjoying it to like, oh, wait, I want to pursue this again very naturally. But I think now, like, you know, even last night I was thinking about this, like I was supposed to run 20 miles yesterday and I was at 18 and it's 7:30 and I'm doing the math and I'm like, I need to hang out with my kiddo before he goes to bed. Like that's more important to me than this like 1% gain of finishing these last 2 miles. And, you know, and I don't know, it's I'm in a different phase of life. And I think that having the health lens and then also having my son just, yeah, it makes you think about sport differently, but, you know, still being able to prioritize that like place in yourself that is a competitor and have an outlet to put it into is really fun.
Perfect. Well said. And in the spirit of the ethos of this podcast, which is called the Headlamp Hour, I love that you brought that up. You know, this is about fitting in what we love to do, trail running, into our family life and our work life and everything else. And so that's a perfect like point to example that you can, you know, or example that you can point to, like yesterday, you know, I'm at mile 17, 18 of my supposed to be 20 mile run. And, you know, I want to spend time with my family. Like, that's fine. Like, that's cool. So let's talk about your family. So you have a son named Callum. Is that how you say it?
Close. It's Callum, but Callum. It is an okay. Interesting one. So no worries.
And how old is Callum?
He's 2.5.
2.5. Good. That's a fun age. So I guess like, and your husband, his name is Mitch. Is that right?
Yeah. And he's a pilot for Southwest.
That's cool. That's cool. So I guess just like, just a kind of a generic question, but how did you two meet and what was that experience like?
Yeah. So we don't have a, you know, really like interesting story. I met him via Hinge once I was in Southern California. So we met on a dating app.
Perfect.
Love and it was funny. Yeah. It was funny because he was working in private aviation at that time and I was working in the medical device space as a consultant. So we both were constantly on the road. We had schedules that were up in the air every week and we kept trying to meet for a date and it just was not working out. And I mean, probably for like a month and a half. And so I kind of talked it up in my mind. I'm like, well, if we can't even go on one date, like this is never going to work out. And so anyway, we finally pegged down a date and, you know, hung out at this restaurant until it closed. And then, you know, we wanted to go somewhere else and realized that this whole little sleepy beach town that we were in just shut down at 10 p.m. So we just like laid on the beach and talked until 2 a.m. And anyway, from the day that I met him, we just never stopped hanging out. And he is just my absolute best friend and just a really wonderful person.
Awesome. Yes, that sounds great. I think that's an interesting story. I didn't meet my wife on a dating app, so that's pretty cool. But
how did you guys meet?
We met in college on the cross country team here at Southern Utah University. So, yeah.
Very cool. And you guys are both ex-collegiate athletes. So how does that work? I'm sure you both have your own athletic pursuits now, yeah, juggling your family and 5 kids.
Yeah, well, We do. So my wife, you know, for the past 8-9 years has been either pregnant or recovering from pregnancy pretty much.
Right.
So her athletic pursuits have definitely taken a back seat, and that's something that we've talked about, and she's kind of transitioned, I guess, to a different hobby or a different pursuit, and that's actually like gardening and homesteading, and we have some rabbits, and we're gonna get some chickens and do that that whole thing. So we're excited to do that, but yeah.
So cool.
Yeah.
Well, I guess being pregnant kind of is an athletic pursuit. So you've been juggling your running, and she's been juggling being pregnant. So that's awesome.
But she's very supportive of me and loves to kind of, I guess, like kind of live vicariously running wise through me. And I'm just so grateful for her and the sacrifices she's made, because I love children. I love my children, and definitely not something that I like take for granted that she's like sacrificed her body and her mind and everything else for. So I guess, like, to flip it back on you, this is this is about you. How has being a mother kind of changed you and your athletic pursuits?
Yeah, I mean, you know, becoming a parent changes everything about you and your DNA, I feel like, and just what your life looks like day to day. I think, gosh, there are so many lessons that being a mom has taught me, but I think the biggest thing that I realized is that I don't feel selfish about pursuing my athletics. I think that it's one branch of my very multifaceted life that gives me a lot of joy. And I think it brings me into alignment for myself and allows me to be the best that I can be for myself and for him. And so I don't feel guilty about, you know, making space for that hobby. But at the same time, what that means often is, you know, I still want to prioritize spending as much of my time with him as possible. So it has meant a lot of, you know, very early morning runs so that I can be active and present and do breakfast and get him off to school and, you know, all of that, and late evening things. And I run on my treadmill a lot more than I used to, because I don't have time to go, you know, as a dad, like, you're doing the calculations. Okay, it's going to take me 20 minutes to drive there. I'm going to do an hour run and drive home. It's like, well, I could just do an hour and 40 minute run on my treadmill. And yeah, that's way more efficient. So it's definitely changed the logistics of what I do, but it hasn't changed the unwavering, like, passion in you know, pursuing things that are important to me. It, I think, ultimately has just, I think when you parent a child, you have to do so much, like, reparenting of yourself and, you know, teaching him skills and just how to regulate his emotions and his behaviors. And, you know, it makes me more aware of when I am starting to get, you know, to a place where I feel dysregulated. And so it's really cool, because as I'm teaching him so many things, I feel like I'm reteaching myself lessons that I'm like, hey, maybe you need to go put yourself in timeout for a minute. So I feel like, yeah, just being a mom has, you know, I don't know, just given me interesting perspective on life. And he is just the greatest joy. So yeah, being a mom is my absolute favorite thing about my life.
Awesome. I love it. Yeah. Wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. I wanted to transition to something that happened at the end of February to you. You were in a pretty scary car accident, it looks like. Sounds like you dislocated your shoulder, but were ultimately okay, but still obviously a very, very scary experience. Can you talk about, like, what happened or where you were and all that?
Yes. So I was on my way to work at the hospital. So we might get to this, but I've made a career shift since then. But I was working at the hospital and going to nursing school. And I was on my way there for a 5 a.m. shift, and my hydro flask dropped under my seat, and I was reaching to get it. And right as the highway kind of took a bend to the right, and I looked up just in time to go straight into the left guardrail and took out about 35 feet of guardrail going 75, 80 miles an hour. So, yeah, it was unfortunate, but I'm super thankful that no one else was involved. It could have been a lot worse. There was it was kind of on an overpass. So had I gone another 30 feet, I would have gone over the bridge. I haven't been in a major car accident prior to that. So it was a very jarring experience. And I think my biggest takeaway from it is just, it was a jarring reminder of just how fragile our time here is and how, any of it can change on a dime. And I think I'm very aware of that every day, but it was certainly a very jarring, eye-opening experience.
Yeah, for sure. And how are you doing now? How's your recovery been?
I honestly am fine. So I walked away from it, like you said, with the shoulder dislocation. So, I've got a reverse Hill Sachs deformity on my humerus and torn labrum and, a laundry list of things that are going to be a work in progress. But for the most part, it hasn't really affected my running. It hasn't, I can pick up my kiddo. There are certain things that don't feel great right now, but for the most part, I am fine. And there are, minor things that will heal with time and things that I'll get back to doing, like swimming and some of my weightlifting and things like that. But if that's all that was taken, then that is a really, lucky thing.
Yeah. And it looks like you had to pivot as well in one of your race plans. You looked like you were going to run the Oakland Marathon, but instead ran a local half marathon there in Bozeman. I guess talk about that decision and just in general, the decision, how it is to switch gears after an injury or an accident, but also how you made the most out of it and how it benefits you in the long run.
Yeah. So right after my accident, I just was unsure of the extent of damage. I couldn't get in to see an orthopedic surgeon immediately, nor could I get the imaging that I needed to really assess what the extent was. So I had about 2.5 weeks at that point until the marathon, maybe 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And I just messaged, I was going to run it with the Under Armour Flow Elite team. And I messaged my contact there and just told her that I didn't feel comfortable committing to this just with the circumstance. I didn't know what I would look like in the next 3 weeks if I was having surgery or, what have you. So they were super understanding and supportive in my healing. And so then it was just a matter of, getting in to see my orthopedic surgeon, figuring out, what I could and couldn't do, letting some of that swelling come down. And what I found was it was actually a lot easier recovery process than I thought it was going to be. The swelling went down pretty quickly. I got, my mobility for the most part is really good. So I was able to continue running. So it wasn't honestly that disruptive to my training. So I continued running. Kind of had to rework my build to canyons because I had factored in doing this marathon and, without it, the build looked a little bit different. So I kind of pieced that together with my coach. And then, so the week that I did the half marathon, it was kind of a big mileage week in our reworking. And I just woke up on Thursday just feeling tired and unmotivated and, the weekend miles were daunting and what I needed to get done. So I just thought hopping into the local half would be a great way to kind of get a little workout in, get some intensity in, and have some miles that are kind of fun. And I think additionally, like, I don't ever really often step to start lines feeling tired. I like to have most of my races be, I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't really do training races well. Like, if someone told me to go out and run zone two or something for a race to make it a training race, like, I don't really like doing that. If I step to a start line, I like being my, you know, knowing that I can reach the potential that I feel I have. And anyway, so it was just a different experience from that standpoint, different mindset going into a race. And I think I gained a lot personally from that. But to your point, it is difficult to deal with an injury and to figure out how to move forward with that. And I think my mindset is always just like, what can you do? You know, it's not helpful to focus on what you can't do. So, you know, if this is what you're working with, like, what can you do? What's going to bring you joy? And just how do you continue moving forward, right? Just like an ultra, it's like maybe you can't walk in the, or maybe you can't run in this moment, but you can walk, or, you know, whatever. So I think I just try to keep a healthy perspective in that way.
Good. Awesome. Well, yeah, I appreciate that. And it is like difficult to kind of change your mind or switch gears, you know, after that injury or accident. And, but I love how you kind of, you know, took it in stride and did what you could with what you had at the moment. So that's cool.
Yep.
Another thing I wanted to talk about was, your work. But before we kind of talk about your current role at Aravaipa, which I'm really interested in talking about, I want to actually go back to an Instagram post you wrote in January. You said, "I feel completely aligned in our path while simultaneously some days feeling like I'm treading water in it. Mitch is an airline pilot, often away on trips. I'm going to school and working at the hospital, also sometimes away on training runs or at races, pursuing running goals and personal fulfillment. It is a complex equation, making the best choices for Callum, for me, for Mitch, for the short and for the long term in every moment of every day. However, amidst the moments that feel hard, we also have so much opportunity. This career shift for me, even in the short term, has allowed me to be home every night, which was one of the main drivers for me to get out of medical sales. It has given Mitch and I many opportunities to refine our communication, coordination, and patience with one another. Balance is a moving target. Be patient. Give your best in each moment, big and small. My constant lessons in life and my constant lessons in ultras." So that's the end of the post. But it sounds like, so you were in medical sales and then this was a switch before even to Aravaipa that you made to try and get your life kind of more in line and more in balance. So talk about that and kind of what it meant for you, Mitch, and Callum, all in that, like, balance is a moving target type of thing.
Yeah. So I have always worked in the medical device space since I got out of college. I did a brief little stint in recruiting in the biotech space, but for the most part, I've always been in med sales. And I, you know, being a female in a very male dominated space, being someone with, you know, without the credentials that most people had in that space, I had a health science background and most people came into it with a, you know, biomedical engineering degree. And so just, you know, from the get-go in that industry, I feel like I had to work so hard to prove myself and to kind of climb that ladder, right, to get to my account management positions that I have held. And I felt like that was something that was really integral to, like, who I was. When in all reality, I mean, we are not what we do, right? We are who we are because it's who we are. It's not about your job. It's not about your, you know, athletics. And so I think when I had Callum, I chose to stay home with him for a year and a half. And that really helped me to kind of untangle this, like, you are not your job, right? Like, you are still all of these amazing things without that. And that was really important time that I spent with him. And I valued that. But then going back into work after that year that I spent with him, I went back into medical sales because that's what I had always done. It's what I loved. It's what I know how to do. And I worked for GE Healthcare. I had a huge territory from Alaska over to Montana, down to Colorado, Utah, Idaho. It was huge. So I was on the road every single week, and Mitch is on the road every single week. And I just found that now that I've added this new and really important piece into my life of being a mom, it just felt really different than it did before. And I think, honestly, even if Mitch wasn't on the road every week, I would have felt this way. Mm-hmm. But having him on the road, in addition to me being on the road, it was just like a logistics test that just did not make any sense. I mean, we were just basically passing Callum from one person to the next, and we weren't getting quality family time together. And it was just really hard from that standpoint. So I left my job at GE without a clear path forward. We were just kind of in a place where it was like, this isn't working at all. Yeah. And so I left and just kind of took a beat and did some searching for a remote position. But then I just kind of was like, gosh, I don't know if that, you know, I just love being in person and I love interacting with people. I don't know if that would be a good fit for me. So ultimately I decided to pursue nursing because I felt like that would be something that kept me, you know, I'd get to sleep in my own bed every night. I would work in healthcare. It's a very like known path and it's one that I've pursued previously. So not to get on a side tangent here, but I went to nursing school a little over 10 years ago and then ultimately pivoted to a public health degree in like the 11th hour. So I had done all of the, you know, work for the most part. So I knew exactly what I was getting into. And it just felt like that would be a path that allowed me to like fulfill some of the things that make me happy. It would make me like happy enough, I guess, because it would give me that time with Callum. It would give me stability in being here with him. And anyway, so we went down that path. I was taking some classes. I was working as a tech. And I just kept feeling like uninspired, I guess, for lack of a better term. It was just like, yeah, it just felt like this is a safe path. It's a known path, but I don't feel excited about this. And, you know, when you're trying to juggle a family and a hobby and a career, like maybe your career doesn't have to be exciting, right? Like we can just do things because it's functionally good in this phase of our life. And I think I just kind of made peace with that. But the other part of me kept searching online for something else. I just felt like this, you know, especially coming from a background where I felt like I'd worked so hard to refine some of these skills in account management and business to business relationships and, you know, contract negotiations. I just felt like I missed utilizing those pieces of myself. And so I had gone through some interviews for remote positions. And, you know, I guess ultimately, like Mitch was like, you know, you're in a great position here because you don't have to take anything, right? Like you can just wait for the right thing to come. You can keep taking your classes until then, like pursue this safe path while you, you know, look for maybe something else that excites you. And I feel really grateful because he is very supportive of just reconfiguring our life at any given time to make sure that we're all happy. And so I feel really lucky for that. But anyway, all of this to say, as soon as Jamil posted the position, I was like, this is it. Like, this is the intersection of my skills and what I'm interested in. And yeah, things just kind of evolved from there. I FaceTimed him. We got on like a video call pretty immediately and just talked through some high level details. And I think it became pretty clear on both sides through our conversations that like this was a really good fit. And, you know, like a month and a half into this, 2 months, I think we both agree. It's been a lot of fun.
That's so cool. Thank you for piecing together the story there, because yeah, I was wondering how kind of it all played out. And it sounds like, so you were in medical sales for a long time, but you had started in nursing school like 10 years ago. And so you were saying, okay, I'll stop the sales because it allows me to be home with Callum more, and just more balance. And so you decided to go back to nursing school and start in that, but then quickly again, found something else that, you know, like you said, inspires you more, or is at the intersection more of your personal passion and your professional skills. So I just love seeing that. I love it when that can happen. That's like, you know, what I think we all are looking for. And so that, yeah, it was just earlier in March, right, of this year, 2024, that you started working then at AirVipa. Is that right?
Yeah, I actually came on the last week of February, but I don't think we announced it until like mid-March. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Awesome. And your official title there is Director of Partnerships. Is that right?
Correct. So okay. I manage all of our partnerships for our 60 plus events. So you, as you know, mostly trail. We've got a couple of road races and a handful of mountain bike races that we put on every year. And then I also manage partnerships over our media arm, so Mountain Outpost, the live stream productions that we put on. So both for our races and also for a few others out there. Western States was just announced, so we're doing that live stream. We're doing Hard Rock, and there's a lot of other exciting things that we are rolling into with 2024 and into 2025. So yeah, it is, again, you know, utilization of business to business skills, negotiating contracts, and you know, ultimately ensuring that who we bring on is aligned in our values, in our vision, ensuring that we're continuing to elevate the athlete experience, and also elevating just the collective event experience as a whole. So yeah, it's really cool. I feel really, really grateful for it.
That does sound really cool. I listened to a podcast recently with Zach Marion. He was on the Ultra Uncovered podcast, talking about, yeah, the future of live stream media and how he's involved there with Mountain Outpost and AirVipa. And I just think, from, you know, the outside looking in, like AirVipa is like the like almost like the future of at least like North American kind of trail running, it seems like, as far as the kind of events and production that gets put on, and especially with like the live stream. And so I guess talk about, I know you've only been in the position for just a few weeks or a month or two, but like, talk about, I guess, like how that excites you and kind of why you wanted to be a part of that.
Yeah, it's been interesting to watch our sport grow, right? And with that, we've seen growth that has made runners and communities happy, and growth that has not done that. And I think it's been interesting to be in a position where I have some say in what this growth looks like for our company. I think that we, you know, want to continue to support local communities. As far as like live stream coverages go, I mean, I would love to continue to see equal coverage for women and men. And, you know, it's cool to see this grow and to be, I guess, along for the ride in this. And I think that there is a lot of opportunity in our sport. There's a lot of opportunity at AirVipa, and you know, working with Jamil is just inspiring because he's such a cool person to you know, just be in the driver's seat of some of that. So yeah. Did that kind of answer it?
Yeah, it did. And I have kind of a follow-up question on that, because something you said kind of sparked a question, because it seems like Aravaipa is able to kind of ride this fine line between like being a big growing company that puts on very good high quality events. Specifically, I'm thinking about trail running. You know, I ran the Black Canyon 100K last month, and it was, you know, amazing. But also like keeping it local and keeping it like kind of small town vibe. Whereas, you know, a certain organization in the trail running world has been, you know, like UTMB has been criticized for, I guess, you know, going in like kind of quote unquote taking over races and making them like very corporate and blah, blah, blah. Like whether you agree with that or not, I'm just saying, I feel like Aravaipa has mostly avoided that kind of criticism when they're also like, not necessarily like taking over trail races, but they're accumulating the ownership, or at least not control, but I don't know what word I'm looking for, but like they're being able to have lots and lots of events, but still make them feel like local and whatnot. So I guess like just react to that. What are your thoughts on that, and why Aravaipa has been able to do that?
Yeah, I mean, I think who you partner with and how you partner says a lot about who you are. And I think Jamil can speak to this better than me, because he's the one that has, you know, helped to grow our footprint in terms of expanding and taking ownership of different races. But from what I've picked up, it is important to him to keep the people that were there involved, you know, if they wish to be, and to keep that race what it is to them, but just elevate it with bringing in the Aravaipa brand and some of our reach and capabilities. So I think having that lens has allowed us to keep these events grassroots and true to who they originally were, while elevating them from bringing in who we are.
Yeah, for sure. And I love that. I'm a big fan of Aravaipa. Full disclosure, I'm also a big fan of UTMB. Like I'm going to do the Speed Goat 50K this summer as well. And you know, obviously aspire to, you know, move upwards and onwards in those events as well. But it's just interesting kind of thinking about the differences and, you know, kind of compare and contrast the two organizations. But
yeah, absolutely. Well, that's exciting for you. That's in your backyard.
yeah, it is. That's one of the kind of was one of the crucial factors as far as as far as deciding what race to do with baby number 6 on the way here soon. So trying to keep them close. But
that's awesome.
Anyways, I mentioned that I went to Black Canyon, and that's actually where I met you. I don't know if you remember this or not, but so a quick little anecdote about meeting you. You went and crewed Ryan Montgomery there, and then you ran the 60K the next day. Me and my wife pulled up to the packet pickup there at, I can't remember the name of the place now, but anyways, and I wasn't sure like if it was actually like packet pickup, cause it said like packet pickup in an email, like was the day before or something. And then this was just like the expo or something else. So I was like, oh shoot, is this really packet pickup? So I saw Ryan, who I didn't know personally, but I had recognized him, and I said, oh, I'll go ask Ryan. And then also you were there, and we got to meet you as well. Do you remember that interaction?
I do. Absolutely.
Okay. Good. Well, it was a good day. It was nice to meet you there. And just based on kind of some of your Instagram posts with that weekend and you and Ryan, you said on Instagram it was so special to crew Ryan Saturday at Black Canyon Ultras, run it with him, then flip the next day to have him as crew while I race the 60K. I've been to a lot of races solo, but gosh dang it, it is so special to have your people there. So as we kind of wrap up our conversation here, can you talk just a little bit about that trail community and how important it is to you, and maybe with the backdrop of the recent experience with crewing Ryan at Black Canyon and then him crewing you the next day?
Yeah, I like to call myself an introverted extrovert. So I can absolutely go to events and like make new friends and whatnot. But I, even in doing it, I feel shy sometimes. I reset by myself. And I don't know. Anyway, all of this to say, like, it's an intimidating experience to go to a race with a ton of people that you don't know. And one thing that I've always loved about trail events is that I feel like I can do that. And I just am met with so many supportive and amazing and great people. And every time I go to a race, whether I go alone or not, I come away with new friends. And I think that's just a huge testament to who the trail community is. And that is really cool. But I think layering on that, going to a race with people that you really care about, people who understand what you need and what you're going through, and who are going to be there for that big finish line hug, are just, that experience is unmatched. So, yeah, it was really cool to share that with Ryan. He started coaching me in 2020, and he now kind of sits as like an advisor. He doesn't, program everything that I do day in and day out, but he certainly helps navigate my training from a 30,000 foot view. But he is my best friend in the whole world. So really special to share race weekends with him.
Cool. Cool. And we love Ryan. He's a fellow Utahn, so got a shout out to
He
him.
is.
All right. As we wrap up here, what's next for you, in life or trail running in the next few months here?
Yeah, so I am racing Canyon's 100K in about a month, and I'm very excited for that. I also have Silver Rush 50 in July. I'm trying to secure a Leadville slot to race my first 100 in August, hopefully at Leadville 100, and then a lot of other plans that are kind of up in the air based on how all of those things go. So I might do the Well, I will do the black, or I'm sorry, not black. I'm planning to do the Backbone FKT 2 weeks after Canyon's 100K. That's in Southern California in the Santa Monica Mountains, where I fell in love with trail running. So that'll be really special. The only caveat to that is I will not do that if I happen to get a golden ticket at Canyon's. And I guess one thing I'll say here is looking at that start list is intimidating, and I feel like my resume does not meet even halfway the resume that a lot of those women have. But I do want to go for a ticket. That's a goal of mine in the next couple of years, and I'm going to run it with that intention. And it's scary to say that and put that out there. I've said it on social media too, but that's my goal, and it's scary, and you might not meet it, but I think as well as anyone that in ultra running it's a battle of fitness and execution. And I think that I have just as good of a shot as anyone at least 75% of that equation. So there is certainly some with probably better fitness than me, but yeah, I'm gonna go shoot my shot there. So if I get that, then I would not do the Backbone FKT. But that's kind of the loose plan for the year.
Heck yeah. Love the enthusiasm and love I don't know, the aspiration. Yeah, that's certainly one of my like goals as well, to get a golden ticket in the next couple of years. At Black Canyon for me a month ago, It was definitely like it was a very like shoot for the moon goal. Like if it happened, like that'd be really, really cool. With it being my first like 100K and really first ultra, you know, like big ultra, I was like, I want to get top 10. But so I guess like just a quick hit on this topic, because I think it's interesting, like how you said you were looking at the start list for canyons and it's intimidating. And it, all the golden ticket races, yeah, are super intimidating start lists. And you pretty much have to go out and put yourself out there. Like I was thinking like, oh, maybe I'll try to like go out and like sneak into the top 10. And if there's enough like carnage or whatever, like, you know, maybe like I could sneak in and get top three or top six. And there's enough people ahead of me that, you know, defer or whatever. But like, I found out like there was a ton of carnage, but I was still like ninth, you know, like, and then there were a bunch of people ahead of me that, you know, there were some big names for sure, but there were several guys as well that were probably just like me, like just hoping kind of to get a ticket and kind of just trying to break into the trail running scene, that actually went for it and then it stuck. Right. So I guess like talk about if you can reveal anything as far as your strategy goes. Are you going to try to like, you know, be aggressive or play the more conservative game?
Yeah, that is still to be determined. I haven't finalized my strategy here, but I think ultimately, you know, I want to continue to put myself in these environments where, you know, rising tides raise all ships, right? So the more that you put yourself in those environments, the more that you play around with your own racing strategies, what works for you, what doesn't, the more you're going to learn. And whether that yields a golden ticket or not, I think I just want to continue to learn about myself and the depths of my, you know, potential and resiliency. I'm sure it's the same for you. So strategy to be determined. I will circle back with you on that.
No problem. No problem. That's fine. That's a fair answer. Love it. Well, Rachel, I have one last question for you. And that is, what mantra or saying serves as your headlamp through the dark and difficult moments of life and or running?
So I'm going to give you two. One that I always remind myself in life and certainly deep in an ultra is that everything ends. You know, the moment of joy that you're in, the moment of suffering that you're in, like it will end. So I think what I try to center myself on is just embracing whatever that is fully in that moment. And just knowing that it's a temporary wave in this, you know, expansive ocean of life that we are in. So that's something I remind myself. And then the second thing is, I love this quote. It's on my website, but a good life is a process, not a state of being. It's a direction, not a destination. So I like that one because, you know, I think that we are quick to feel like, okay, a golden ticket is going to be what solidifies, you know, my happiness in trail running, or like, you know, this promotion is going to be what, you know, I'll finally be happy when I like get this thing. And I very much have worked in the last like 10 years to remove myself from, you know, staying centered on these goals, right? But not being taught, not having my like happiness or fulfillment tied to them, right? Like the joy is in the process and the joy is in the direction that you're going. It's not about where you're going necessarily.
That resonates with me so much. I love that. And I need to hear that over and over again in my life. This will end, like this too shall pass is what I think of. And then, yeah, like life is a direction, not a destination. I think they're very related, you know, in that the hardest thing about a trial or a challenge sometimes is not knowing when it will end, right? Is not, because sometimes if you know, like, oh, it's going to end next week, like, okay, like I can make it through that. But Yeah, sometimes the undetermined end to a difficult situation is what makes it so difficult, and reminding ourselves that it will end at some point, and I've got to choose to be happy now, despite these challenges, or choose to be happy, not based on some outcome, but based on my worth as a person and my relationships with others, then that's just so powerful. So thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome. That's my headlamp.
Sweet. I love that. That's a good one. All right, Rachel. Well, again, where can people find you?
Probably my Instagram's the best place to find me. I've got a website too, but you could find that in my Instagram bio. And yeah, those are probably the two best places.
Cool. Well, we will link that in the show notes. Thank you again so much for being here, for taking the time. I've really enjoyed the conversation. Just really admire you as a person, as a mother, as a runner, as everything else that you do. So thanks, Rachel. I appreciate it.
Hey, the respect is mutual. Thank you so much for your time, Nate.
Thanks.